You're listening to
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
With Dawn Sarah.
With Dawn Sarah.
Thanks.
Bye.
Hey, it's Dawn, and we are here for another episode of Sex Gets Real. There is so much that I have to tell you about. I am so excited about so many things, but also ridiculously busy because of so many things. So this episode is dropping on Sunday, December 3rd, which means if you're listening to it live when it drops, well, I guess not live, but you know what I mean. If you're listening to it, you still have time to join in the fun for the Explore More Summit Bodies edition. It kicks off on Monday, December 4th. It's all online. It's totally free. And it's 14 talks with experts all about body positivity, diet culture, weight stigma, centering our pleasure in marginalized bodies. And in fact, one of the speakers is porn performer April Flores, which is super exciting because Crash Pad Series, which is one of my favorite feminist queer porn companies ever, is sponsoring the summit. So of course, if you want to find amazing feminist queer porn that has fat bodies and black bodies and disabled bodies and all the kinds of bodies, you can go to crashpadseries.com. And of course, last week we heard a super sexy clip from April and her partner Milka, but you can actually see April talk for free all about being a fat porn performer at the summit. So the summit is exploremoresummit.com. You can sign up for free. Crashpadseries.com is where you can head to get super rad queer porn. And of course, my porn workshop just went live. So if you're looking for a way to learn about porn that's ethical, if you want to learn more about feminist porn and what it's about, if you're curious why people watch porn and what it means when people watch porn, because I get a lot of questions from concerned partners about what it means when someone's watching a specific kind of porn or a specific kind of person, or hiding their porn even. And if you want to find ways to use porn to help your relationship stay super hot and super sexy, this workshop is totally for you. It's only $24, and it comes with a 45-minute video, a huge workbook full of all kinds of questions and exercises. Plus, there's some bonuses on shame, a big resource guide, and a really rad bonus from the Pleasure Mechanics, all about embodied masturbation. So there is a link in the show notes for this episode for that. You can check it out. And this week, guess who is here? Sunny Megatron and Ken Melvoin-Berg, who are such favorites whenever I have them at the Explore More Summit. Basically, whenever I'm around them, I laugh nonstop, which is pretty much what you're about to hear with this episode. It's just me laughing uncontrollably for large sections of the interview because they are so delightful and so hysterical. We talk about their new show, American Sex Podcast. We talk about death fetishes and the infamous grapefruit lady and her blowjob video. We talk about Ken and his changing relationship to kink and Sunny's menopause. We also field listener questions on pubic hair and the politics of it, as well as how to get started with fisting. So there's a little bit of everything in this episode. It's amazing. And I have a bajillion things going on. If you thought that was the end of what I have, you're wrong, because I'm also a pleasure professional for O School. And the really awesome thing about O School is right now, all of their classes and live streams are totally free. And so I am live streaming with them at least once a week, which means you can pop on for free and take live classes with me. Interact with me, ask questions. There's even a tip jar so you can leave tips if you really enjoy the stream with me. But keep an eye out on the O School calendar and sign up with them so that you can get notifications whenever I am teaching. And Last but not least, be sure to head to patreon.com/sexgetsreal if you want to support the show. I am up to my eyeballs in summiting. I have some amazing workshops I'm developing, some huge things in development for 2018. And Kate McCombs is going to be at my house on Tuesday because we are live streaming for O School together, all about keeping things hot in long distance relationships. I have so much going on. But that doesn't mean I don't want to hear from you. I want your questions for the show. So you can go to sexgetsreal.com and fill in the contact form. And one of you actually wrote to me recently and said, you had no idea that I also did one-on-one coaching, which is a total shame. If you go to dawnsarah.com, you can actually learn more about my workshops and my one-on-one coaching. I do lightning sessions that are just 20 minutes. If you just need a little bit of support around some big feelings you're having or one particular problem, if you and a partner want couples coaching, I work with couples and oh my gosh, we have so much fun. We work through amazing things together. So you can check out all the details about my coaching practice at dawnsarah.com. I know that was a lot that I just threw at you, but holy crap, I am so frickin' busy and I want to make sure you know about all the places that are free where you can come hang out with me and also the things that are super affordable that you can grab too. Because, you know, hey, nothing says happy holidays like a porn workshop, but ba-dum-bum. Okay, let me tell you about Ken and Sunny and then we'll dive into the interview. Superheroes of sex ed. Married couple Ken Melvoinberg and Sunny Megatron are partners in every sense of the word. In addition to co-producing Showtime's Sex with Sunny Megatron, they initially gained recognition writing and teaching about everyone's favorite subject, sex. In their sellout workshops, their unique brand of edutainment, plus combined 25-plus years of sexuality teaching experience, puts students at ease. Each session seamlessly combines their humorous lecturing style, interactive exercises, and the latest sexuality research. Sunny hosts their Showtime original television series, Sex with Sunny Megatron, taking viewers on a journey into the world of adult play as everyday people expose their deepest and most intimate fantasies. Always honest, funny, and sex positive, the show provides an interesting fresh twist on sexual exploration. Their latest endeavor is their podcast, American Sex, which we talk about, and that features a super eclectic mix of guests from all walks of life. So, we are going to jump in and laugh and laugh and laugh, and I can't wait to hear from you. So, reach out, send me your questions, sign up for the things. Hopefully, I'll see you at the summit and on O School. And here are Sunny and Ken. Welcome to Sex Gets Real, Sunny and Ken. Hello.
Hello, Dawn.
Hi. I am so delighted to talk to both of you today because I feel like every time I talk with both of you, all I do is just laugh the entire time.
Good.
So, yeah.
Our evil plan is working.
Yeah. Let's make people laugh while we talk about sex.
Yep.
Yeah. So you have an exciting new project going on. You've got a brand new podcast that you're putting out into the world.
Yeah. American Sex Podcast.
How has that been?
It's been amazing. We have had just a great time. This is a project that we've been putting off for 3 years.
At least 3 years.
And yeah. We kept saying, we're going to have a podcast. We're going to have a podcast. Because I did one. Like my life is incredibly varied in that I do stuff about true crime and the paranormal and sex-related stuff. And I've had true crime and the paranormal-related podcasts in the past, but I have yet, this is my first one that I have done ever with anything with sex and sexuality. Mm-hmm. And of course, like me and Sunny do everything together, and this is just an amazing idea. And we looked around and we found this incredible name that nobody was using in its American Sex Podcast.
Right. And I don't know, for us, that the name kind of, I guess, solidified everything that it taps into like the zeitgeist of what makes sexuality in America today from like, people who are kind of memes and, you know, that everybody knows to people who are fighting legislation to kind of everyday people like you and me and a little bit of everybody.
Yeah. And also I wanted to give a shout out to our good friend Jim Marcus for giving us the idea of American Sex Podcast.
Awesome.
He's the one who helped us come up with the name, and I just wanted to give him a shout.
Who have been some of the guests that you've had on, considering that this is a brand new show and you've had some rad fucking conversations?
We have had some just amazing people. So, and I'm not going to go in order here because I want people to like organically go wherever they want. But one of the, I think the feathers in our cap was Dr. Joycelyn Elders, who's a former Surgeon General of the United States under the Clinton administration. Mm-hmm.
And then, and from that to the grapefruit blowjob lady, to someone who...
Auntie Angel.
Yeah, Auntie Angel, to somebody who fantasizes about their own death in their own, like, BDSM sexual fantasies.
And he likes robots as well.
So yeah, he has, and like, he's into robots.
And he's into robot sexuality as well as, like, death fetish. Mark Schraber, who's an amazing journalist, and he was one... he was the first person to get married to his husband... at the same county where Kim Davis was trying to like create all of the problems with gay marriage, and they were the first ones to do that. And he did this as a journalist and as somebody who was getting married. So it was just an amazing conversation.
Right. And then we go to like the guy who sang the classic What in the Butt?
Samwell, who was actually involved in our marriage. I hired Samwell to come in and sing What in the Butt a cappella style, unbeknownst to Sunny, as I proposed to her.
That's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And so we interviewed Samwell.
So we have serious guests. We have like cheeky guests. And it's funny because a lot of our serious guests we talk to and we talk about cheeky, funny things. And then a lot of our funny guests we talk to and we get into some really serious subjects. So it's all over the place in a really good way.
So what was it like to talk to the grapefruit lady? Because I'm sure everyone listening has seen the video and or heard of the video. I will of course link to the video, but
you know what's interesting about this, we've known Auntie Angel for years, and she's actually taught like when we were teaching blowjob classes, we had her as a guest star in our class here in Chicago because she lives in Chicago, and we've just known her for ages. And when we saw her on World Star Hip Hop, I just was amazed at the noises she made. I actually found it kind of ironic. It was like, and I'm like, Sonny, you gotta like listen to this. This is so hot. And so we just coincidentally we were fans of hers first, and then we ended up meeting her at Exotica, I believe.
Yeah, we met her somewhere because we live in the same town, and then we just kept like being at the same events and you know running into each other all the time.
And she's a really, really good friend and nice lady. You know, and that's and it's interesting that we, you know, we had never thought about, you know, I'm like, hey, Sonny, what do you think about having Auntie Angel on? Because people really like her. And it just, our ratings blew up all over the place when that happened. It was awesome.
So begs the question, have you tried the grapefruit stuff?
We haven't actually.
We have not.
Okay, so here's the story. I bought a grapefruit run once and it was sat on the counter and I think it just went bad because none of us really like grapefruit. And I'm afraid of them. Like, it seems so messy and so sticky, and I don't want to get the bed messy. And we have toys. We use strokers where, you know, instead of our grapefruit, we have, there's a Fleshlight one, or you can use the Tanga egg or whatever. So to me, that just makes more sense.
Mm-hmm. I kind of want you to do the grapefruit.
Yeah.
I want the noises along with it.
Oh, God. Okay.
Would you wear an Auntie Angel mask?
Oh, now we're talking.
I don't know.
How about a unicorn mask?
Maybe. Okay. Maybe. I can be the grapefruit and unicorn?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That would be awesome.
All right.
Yeah, it's funny because I asked Alex once. I was like, should we just try it to say we did, you know, like in the spirit of try the things? And he was like quiet for a minute and he goes, I can't think of how much I don't want grapefruit juice in my urethra.
Right.
So, okay. No, for real. Like, no. This is just as a receiver perspective. The one thing, and this is honest to God, why I have not pushed Sonny to do this, is that I shave my cock and balls, and I'm an older man that has anal fissures. The last thing that I want is, and I wasn't worried, and I didn't even think about the urethra. What I thought is anal fissures, like, you know,
yeah,
and
dripping down into your butthole, like collecting there.
And I, you know what? I love Auntie Angel, but I hate grapefruit. Just like, maybe if it was a huge orange, we could, you know, that you might want to do. Like, that
a huge
might be
orange?
Yeah, a
okay.
huge orange.
Yeah, and I mean, technically, you're supposed to do it with a condom on so it doesn't get in the urethra.
Yeah.
So, you
know. That doesn't help my ass.
That doesn't help your ass at all.
We'd have to invent some sort of a little trot. Like, maybe we could get a juicer, stick that up my butt.
I have a juicer butt plug. I have a juicer butt plug, Ken.
No. The ones with the bin so you could catch the liquid.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Not
yeah.
that kind of a juicer.
Right. Okay, so the guy that liked to fantasize about his own death and that also was into robot sex.
Dick Wound. Dick Wound is he was just the most amazing surprise guest we've ever had.
Yeah.
Now he's becoming a good friend online. We haven't met him in real life yet, but he's just there for us all the time. He's helpful with advice. He is like,
and he also amazing, he
funny
also
guy with legitimate fetish.
Yeah, he co-hosts the Off the Cuffs Kink podcast too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting because I, as a dominant woman, kind of dig the, and when he explained it, I was like, oh, this makes sense. Kind of like the evil villain, like think of the old Batman, like the 1960s Batman, like,
Adam
okay,
West.
Adam West, and I'm Catwoman and I'm going to capture you now and I'm going to seduce you, but I'm also going to like blow this powder in your face that when you have an orgasm, your heart explodes and it kills you, but it's so hot because I'm seducing you. It's like, what do you do? It's those types of scenarios. And I've fantasized about those and played with other people, like submissive males, so that made sense to me. I was like, oh, I get it. But then he actually had health issues that were life-threatening, and those fantasies took on a whole new spin when they really meant something in his life, and that he really could, you know, his heart really could explode. So that was just, it was such a fascinating conversation.
You know, it's funny because as soon as you said, like, we had a guest that fantasizes about his own death, and like my initial reaction was like, huh, that's really different. But then like, as you're talking, I realize, I mean, if you have vampire fantasies, inherently that's a death fantasy.
Right.
It is. I think people overlook that a lot.
Yeah. And I mean, so much with like any other monster fantasy that you might have. I mean, inherent in those fantasies is your own death and romanticizing and sexualizing that. So I guess it's not really that rare. It's just however it gets presented that might seem unusual.
And I find a lot of submissive men will have fantasies that center around them being all consumed by a woman. Sometimes that's financially, sometimes that's completely taking mental control, and sometimes that's to the point of, I can kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds weird, but when you actually play the fantasy, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I've definitely encountered that around just kind of like the smothering, like as a fat woman, you know, there's definitely partners I've had who have been just like, sit on my face and smother me, you know, and it's just kind of like, I want there to be nothing in the universe except for you being on my face or you being on me or whatever it is. And I could see that absolutely going just that one next level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It reminds me, did you see American Gods?
No, I've read it, but I haven't watched the TV series.
Yeah, so I read it years ago, and then I just finished watching the series, and one of the goddesses in the show is a sex goddess, and so, you know, she has sex with people, and they die as the ultimate sacrifice during sex, and the way they depicted on the show was hot. I could get behind that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's
totally. And it's fake. It's not real. I mean, when it comes to fantasies, the cool thing is like, you can fantasize about anything because it's a fantasy. It doesn't mean you're really going to kill someone. It doesn't mean...
Okay, but you know what? I have something to interject here. I would way rather die from fucking than from cancer.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't care what it is. Like, even if it's like murder me by sex, that is much preferable than dying of cancer. Like, fuck cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Seriously.
Can I say fuck?
Oh, fuck yeah. We say all the things here, you know. One of the things that everybody just loves learning from you in your workshops and following along with your adventures, and of course, like your Showtime show, is just how immersed you are in kink and the ways that you build it into your lives with like humor and play. And Ken, I know you've been working through some changes in health recently, and I'm wondering, like, we talk all the time on the show about how we're all temporarily able-bodied, if we're able-bodied at all. And so many listeners write in because they're grieving that their bodies have changed after menopause or after kids or because of surgeries, and how we can kind of stay in touch with ourselves and our loved ones when our bodies feel new or different. And I know because you're kind of going into this space and kind of grappling with health and wellness. And I'm wondering, how has that been for you around the ways that you and Sunny interact, like through your kink and through sex, and kind of what's that been like?
Well, you know what, to be honest, it's been emotionally rough, because being a cis hetero guy, there is so much attachment to primacy of work and being a physically fit individual. A lot of times, you know, I think that a lot of my privilege is awesome, but the downside of it is that, like, I think people expect me to move couches because I'm a big guy, and now I have a heart condition and I can't do that. So what it really means for my kink, I'm going to have to limit how much we do abduction scenes. I could do interrogation all day long, but I think I'm really going to have to limit the super physical stuff.
Right.
I've got a couple of different heart issues going on, and it's been a little depressing because I can't do as much physical things as I want to. I can't even work out right now. It's the first question I asked when I found out about my heart condition was, can I have sex? And they're like, absolutely. But I don't think they know what kind of sex
I think your definition of that word is different than my definition of that word.
I don't think you know what that word means. I coming from a medical background, I have a good understanding of what they meant by the physicality and the limitations thereof. So, you know, basically it's going to be no super duper grabbing somebody, you know, putting them on the ground and hog tying them kind of thing. I'm going to have to limit that kind of physical
right.
ability, but like fucking and, you know, normal bondage scenes. And I do a lot of psychological stuff and interrogation scenes, and all of that's going to be normal for the most part. In fact, it's going to add to it, because I'm going to let all my submissives know I have a heart condition and probably fake a heart attack in front of them. I think that would be kind of fun. as long as I have consent.
Yeah. Yeah.
God. Yeah.
I'm not above that. I also have a seizure disorder, and I've faked seizures in front of my submissives before.
While they were tied up in total bondage. Yeah.
And it's one of my favorite things to do. I'm that much of a sadist.
Yeah. That's a serious mind fuck, Ken.
I know.
And we all laugh because it's funny. Right. Yeah. And, I think, like, you know, we've taken advantage of, like, the lazy, sloppy hand job. Like, you just lay there. I'll get a whole bunch of coconut oil. That doesn't feel bad going into your ass. Just, you don't have to do anything.
Hell yeah.
You know? And he's like, I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, if Sonny has a sore mouth at all, like, I'm, you know, give me a hand. I love hand jobs probably more than anything else. It's the combination of hand and mouth, but, like, mostly it's hand. Like,
right.
If you just give me a nice, slippery hand job, I'm the happiest guy in the universe.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
the hand job is way overlooked, by the way.
Oh, it is. And I think actually for both of us, like, we much more prefer oral and manual sex to, like, intercourse sex. I mean, not that intercourse is bad, but I think you can get more precision with manual and oral than you can with...
I would rather get you off and then do fucking later.
Yeah.
Because, you know,
it's
not
a good
everybody...
ending.
It
it's
is.
A good, the fucking part is a good dessert.
Yeah, so as, you know, even as somebody who's as, you know, does so much involved in sexuality as Sonny and I do, a lot of times it's like we make sure that, you know what, this is the rule about sex, is that it's not the size of the ship or the motion of the ocean, it's making sure all the passengers get off. And I think that's the most important thing, is orgasms happen and then we can do whatever afterwards, but everybody has to have an orgasm. I mean, not every time, of course, but
right.
like we prefer
everyone
it
has
that
to
way.
Get to the point of satisfaction, of
satisfaction
whatever that means for them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Right, because sometimes the satisfaction is in the tease and the edging and not finishing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I totally agree with you about manual sex. Like, that for me is at the very top of the list of just things that always are like, okay, this is good. This is fun. I like this.
Yeah.
And it's just such a shame that, like, culturally we're taught it, that it's kind of like a substitute when you can't get the real thing, in quotes.
To me, that is the real thing. Like,
totally.
that's the main thing for me. It's like, put your mouth or your hands on me. Cool. Oh, he's touching me right now. It's I didn't mean it like on my elbow. Okay.
There's probably someone out there listening who's like, I wish someone would lick my elbow.
Yeah.
I touched her weenus.
You did, and I'm a little dry right now, so I could cut you with my elbows right now.
Do it, baby. Do it. Cut me like you mean it.
Little knife play with my elbows.
That's right. So I'm always getting emails from people who are kink curious and or have kind of secretly started dabbling in kink, and their partner either isn't kinky or they just haven't found the courage to actually have the conversation because they're terrified of the rejection. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, for the two of you, as people who have taught Kink 101 and just been around the world talking about kink, for people who are kind of in that situation of like, I think this is a place I want to experiment, but I'm terrified of bringing it up because I think my partner might totally judge me or shame me. Mm-hmm. What's a good jumping off point for them?
Well, I love that we live in the modern day and age of the internet and YouTube videos and articles that are about sex in every magazine and podcast. And so for a lot of people, if they don't know, like, I don't want to seem like I came up with this idea myself, be like, you know, I was browsing podcasts and I happened to, you know, stumble upon Dawn Sarah's podcast or American Sex or the 8 gazillion other podcasts, or I was looking up cat videos on YouTube, and suddenly I fell
into a pussy hole.
Yeah, exactly. You know, search terms a little weird, and it gave me some ideas. What would you think about XYZ? So those are really good starting off points, like blame it on somebody else. You know, like, this put the seed in my head, you know, and started to grow the idea. What do you think? Or let's watch this, you know, let's watch Sex with Sonny Megatron on Showtime together. It's amazing how many people have told us that, you know, they're just flipping through the TV. They don't talk with their partner about sex. They've always wanted to try something kinky. And then they, you know, stumbled upon the show, watched it together in silence, like, And then after the show, turned to each other like, so what did you think about that segment? And for the first time in 12 years, they actually had an open conversation about their fantasies and desires and about sex. And sometimes it's just that little thing that will spark the conversation.
You know, when my dad found out that I was having the two of you on my summit last year, he shocked me by saying, Sonny Megatron? I love that Sonny Megatron. I love her show. It's like, wow, Dad, that's awesome. And he was just like so excited that I was talking to you because he loves your show and was just having this like total moment of glee that I was having a conversation with the two of you. So, you know, I mean, I had no idea my dad would watch something kinky. And
you know what? Our demographic is like tends to be a little bit older since we really came on the public scene. And I've been a sex educator now for over 21 years, and more and more and more, I'm finding that it is older people that are interested in the classes that we offer and the things that we do. So people that are around our age, and of course there is younger people.
Yeah, our age is upper
40s. Oh, I'm sorry, upper. I'm almost 50. But as we continue on, we've had so many older people thank us for, you know, making sexuality something that they can identify with again, you know, after having been out of it for a little while. And I think that that's like one of the biggest things that we've done is helping people who really need the help and just giving them that first step. And it's not like we've done anything extra special other than like we've opened the door and they take the steps through.
Right. We give them permission to talk about it out loud. And that's really oftentimes all people need to start to get the ball rolling. Then once they get the ball rolling, they're really good at identifying like, okay, this is stuff I know that I know, and this is stuff I know I need help with. And hey, look, there's a class. Let's go, you know?
Yeah.
And boom, life has changed.
Do you think that the folks who come to your workshops are a little bit older because they see educators that aren't college aged and so it feels safe? Do you think it's because they feel more comfortable doing in person versus just kind of growing up in, you know, online spaces and knowing you can find anything online or a combination of things? Like, what do you think draws people in who I think a lot of people would assume aren't interested in classes?
I, you know, and because I've been doing this for so long, the one thing that I've noticed, I think it's a combination of both of those things that you've mentioned. So it's unfamiliarity with new technology combined with wanting that personal connection with somebody that is in their peer group or at least close to it. Because we're not, you know, college age kids that are just getting into this for the first time. I don't look at our age as years. I look at it as levels. So, like, right now, I'm level 49. Sonny's, what are you, level 47?
46.
46. Sorry, sweetheart.
I don't know how old I am, actually. I don't remember. I got menopause lying? Brain right now. Wait, 1971. What year is it? 2017. I'm 46. Yeah, okay. Yay, math!
Yeah.
But I think that just having in its... And I think it's that level of experience that we have. Because you can be the most amazing sex educator in the world. And if you're 27 years old, you know, there's if you're over 30 years old, you're going to get some side eye. Like, how much can a 27-year-old really know? You know, no matter how much education they've had, no matter how much life experience they've had. I mean, I've been teaching classes for almost that long. So I think there's something to be said for, you know, the experience that
yeah.
we have.
Yeah, and it's interesting because even though we have a large portion of our demographic that is, you know, 40 plus, even 50 plus, we still have a good number of people that are in that millennial range that
oh,
are,
for
you know,
sure.
24 to 35 as well. And I think part of it is, and I don't know if we're sort of chameleons. Okay. So like I became an adult in corporate America for almost 2 decades. I was a corporate drone. It was horrible. But I can very much like meld my way into corporate businessy stuff. But then I also have tattoos and I'm, you know, unconventional. And I think when it comes to age, like we transcend different groups and demographics really easily. And I don't know
why. I think the tattoos
why.
Help because I think, and you've actually hit on this a number of times without realizing it. People that are millennials look at us as like, this is my kinky mom and dad, my adopted mom and dad.
Yeah.
And I think that they can relate to us more because we listen to the music they do. We update everything that we're doing all the time to approach millennials as well as older folks. I mean, when I grew up, my ultimate goal is to be a combination of Santa Claus and Joan Price. If I could be those two people at once, that would be amazing because Joan is just incredible. But as I age, I want to get into the area of sexuality and aging, but she's the empress of that. And I
right.
don't, you know, but like I want to, you know, strive to be like her. I don't want to be her. If that
right.
makes sense.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So, Sunny, you've mentioned a couple of times, you keep saying, you're like, oh, no, menopause brain.
I know. It's happening. And I'm. Yeah. It's kind of taking me off guard a little bit because I, you know, a lot of our audience, for some part, was younger. I don't get a lot of questions about menopause. I'm like, you know, menopause, need to really look into that a little more soon. And I kept putting it off. And now I'm like, oh, shit, I keep forgetting to look into it because menopause brain. Like, and there's so much misinformation out there about menopause. It's kind of like this, like, hush, hush, dirty little secret that nobody's really talking about. And
yeah.
even as an educator, I'm like, I think I know what to expect, but I'm not really sure, you know, because
yeah.
I'm getting so much conflicting information. So it's been interesting. It's been, you know, I can tell. I haven't, like, gone and had my hormone levels checked or anything, but I know stuff's happening. Like, I can just tell.
I concur.
Yeah. My libido is, nah.
No, it's not that. It's more the temperature thing. Like, I think
oh,
you need
yeah.
to have
hot
a remote
flashes.
Control with your hot flashes
yeah.
so you can go, turn it up 20 degrees, turn it down 20 degrees, turn it up 20 degrees, turn
yeah.
it down 20 degrees.
And my periods are different. Like, shit's happening. All the chin hairs, like, what the hell?
My beard is still way cooler than yours.
Yeah. Not for long, Ken. Not for long.
Because
my beard's starting to turn gray, too, now.
I throw down a glove, ma'am. I challenge you to a beard off. I will win this one contest.
All right.
Yes. How interesting that you're noticing just like libido changes and kind of going on this like, I mean, just like Ken is, but in a different way. It's kind of like, hey, I'm in a new body that's having new
yeah,
experiences and
yeah.
I got to figure this out.
And it's weird because like, you know, with the libido thing, and I think back to like Emily Nagoski's work, you know, about desire. Like sometimes you just got to jump into it, even if you're not feeling it. And then it'll, you know, once you start to get aroused and you're like, oh yeah, there's my desire. Okay, cool. But even when I have orgasms, like even by myself, they're just not as powerful. They're kind of like, do you ever have those orgasms where you're like working up to it and you're like, yeah, yeah, here it comes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then it's like a dud, like,
yeah.
you know, and most of my orgasms are becoming that. And I'm like, oh, this is awful. Like it's starting to become more trouble than it's worth to just go through everything to get off. And I'm like, that's it. Like, so I have to kind of reframe how I'm looking at things because just everything's different and it's going to continue changing. And I don't know where it's going. So
I do know that our 69s are more like a 68 with sore backs and sore knees.
Yeah.
Prop yourself up however you gotta.
Yeah, that's why those body pillows are a safe.
And then little things like you know, I said even when you're masturbating, like it's easy to get off with yourself. It's like, all right, I'm just gonna rub one out real quick. I got the arthritis hands. You know, so then I'm like, okay, not only is my orgasm not as good, it takes longer to achieve. My hand is killing me now. Like, it's just, it's very new.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I hope that wherever you end up ends up being a delightful place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It will.
Yeah.
I just don't know where it'll be yet.
Right. Or when. Mm-hmm. Kind of a moving target.
Exactly.
So because we were talking about facial hair and beard offs, I was wondering if you wanted to help me answer a question about pubic hair.
Absolutely.
How's that for a transition?
It's actually a good one. It was a little hairy, but you know.
You know. Right. We can keep it fun.
That was bad. That was so bad. Oh, can I tell you my favorite joke?
Yes.
Okay, so we're at the hospital. Oh, now you know it's a joke because I was going to make it a story. But me and Ken were at the hospital the other day in the emergency room, and we were listening to the person in the curtain next to us, and we heard that this guy came in with six little toy horses shoved up his rectum. And we heard the doctor say his condition was stable.
Everybody listening, do not put plastic horses up your ass.
Yeah, without a base, without a trace. Right? Don't do it. But it makes for good jokes. Unless you want to be the butt of a joke.
Oh.
All right. To pubic hair. To pubic hair. Yes.
Okay, so I'll read the email. It's about four paragraphs, and then we'll dive in. So Pro Pubes wrote in and says, "Dear Dawn, thanks for your show. I'm a single, almost 30-year-old, self-identified feminist, straight, cis woman. I've been in three relationships, two of which were quite long, and I'm just beginning to explore casual sex and shorter-term relationships. My question is about pubic hair. I never felt self-conscious about my pubic hair until I was 26 years old, exiting a six-year relationship. I like my pubic hair, I like other people's, and until then, no one had ever commented on it. When I began to date again, men began to say things in explicit or veiled ways. Not every person, but often enough to make this very vocal feminist very self-conscious about something I personally don't want to change. Of course, I know the answer to this question is, it's my body. Who cares? I must be dating the wrong people. But I'm surrounded by a lot of women and people who think everyone should trim. I prefer it shaved and waxed. It feels more hygienic. And I'm totally horrified by the fact that it feels like a fad sold to us to make money and ultimately make me feel infantilized. And that I secretly, or not so secretly, often succumb to the pressure, at least emotionally. So my question is, can you talk to me about the politics of shaving and waxing and how I can approach this in my mind when I'm being rejected for this? It's something that I'm still so uncomfortable and afraid of. Thank you."
Well, I have an interesting side note on this more than anything else. In the recent past 10 years, there has been a huge trend of shaving one's genital hairs, and it's actually become normalized from one thing that's sort of overlooked, and that is the free porn tube sites. Now, this is not me throwing porn under the bus, but when you go to xhamster.com or pornhub.com, which is where a majority of people under the age of 30 go to get their porn because it's free, what they're not realizing is all of the harm that it's causing themselves and the people that make the videos. Now, there's a great podcast on audible.com called The Butterfly Effect about all of the Manwin porn tube sites and what they have done. So one of the examples of this is that for the first time ever in history, cis men that are watching these tube sites that are ages 18 to 26 are having a rate of ED or erectile dysfunction of 1,000% higher than any time in past, only with a living partner. They have no problem with arousal while they're watching porn, but it's when they're interacting with another person because it's so available and it's so over the top. And they do have, and this is the thing, they do have genital hair on there, but it's a niche fetish. And that's the thing about it, is that the broader section of society of millennials is more accustomed to seeing no hair as opposed to a normal amount of hair, which is something that if you're in your late 30s, early 40s, 50s on up, that's what we grew up with. And the people under 30 have not become accustomed to that. Now, to answer her question, I think that it's important and probably a good thing to be overly honest in some ways and admit to having a full bush. The bush is making a comeback, and there's plenty of people that want it, but... And I don't know if this is within that person's comfort level. If you are on social media, as far as like dating sites, not like Facebook, obviously, but like OkCupid, mention that you have a hairy pussy, because there is some things on there that will attract the sort of person that you want to get. I think that if you want to get somebody that likes you for who you are, tell them who you are. Be honest and open. When we teach a class that we do called Networking for Kinky People, this is the exact subject that we teach people, how to sort of make their own FetLife or OkCupid profiles so that they can attract the sort of person that they want. And having a current picture and talking about the issues that are most important to you, I think, are critical.
Yeah, I think it's difficult, because the person who asked the question had it in their answer. You know, like, I know that a lot of this is a fad, and I should just tell those people to fuck off, and this is my bush, and if you don't like it, move on to the next person. And intellectually, we can say that, but it's hard. You know, it's hard to actually live through it. A couple of suggestions I have. One is, any time that I have had body issues, no matter what that is, like, my body doesn't feel quote unquote normal or like everybody else's, was to start seeking out bodies that looked more like mine. So that might be watch a little bit more, you know, feminist porn, where people tend to have more body hair. Start putting yourself in places where you see people that look like you, because like Ken said, the bush is making a comeback, and yeah, that's fad. But there are a lot of people that like pubic hair, that are into hair.
Did someone say feminist porn? This is just a quick reminder that if you too are looking for yummy feminist porn, you can go to crashpadseries.com. They are generously sponsoring my summit, and I love what they do. All the bodies, all the hair, all the things, all the barriers. Check out Crash Pad Series. And also, if you're curious about porn, be sure to check out my porn workshop that just dropped. There is a link in the show notes. Back to Sunny and Ken.
You know, and I kind of have mixed feelings on the like, hey, I've got a full bush, everybody. Because then I'm like, if it were me, would I then start attracting partners that were fetishizing me just for my bush? So it's a hard, there is no easy answer.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I think that if I got to a situation where I was getting ready to hook up with someone, that would definitely be a point where I just at least ask some questions like, what are your feelings about pubic hair?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And like, I certainly at some point would disclose probably before the clothes came off, just because I like talking about those things with people. I know not everyone does, but I do think, like, at least initiating the conversation of, like, what are your thoughts on pubic hair? And if you get someone who's like, ew, gross, then you're like, guess what?
Done.
We're not fucking.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, because we all have our preferences, and that's fine. You know, I have my preference for me and what I like to do with my body, but that has no bearing on what other people should do with their bodies, what my current or future partner's body should look like. That's their deal. That's their decision. That's not for me to say.
Yeah. And like, I don't think any of us are immune from all of the different messages that we're surrounded by. I mean, you know, when I first met Alex, we both shaved completely, and I kind of made a decision along the way, like, I'm just going to stop shaving my pussy and see what happens. And I kind of like the low maintenance approach, but I still have some kind of guilt that comes up every once in a while of just like, maybe he's just being too nice to say he'd prefer it. Cause you know, like some people, and I have to kind of talk myself through that of like, but it's me and it's
right.
My body. And like, I can certainly have conversations, and I do, about that, you know, just kind of our feelings about the pubic hair, but I still have to kind of confront that in myself every once in a while of just like, but should I, you know, and so I think it's just kind of an ongoing thing, and we get to change our minds and try different things. And I don't think that we're betraying ourselves if at some point we're like, maybe I will try shaving.
Right.
You know, we get to, yeah, we get to play with that, but.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know in my life I've gone back, there were times that I was like, so anti-shaving. And then there have been times where I'm like, oh God, I can't even think about not shaving. So I've gone back and forth with just how I feel about my body, how I feel about, you know, my daily maintenance of myself and all those other things.
From a guy's perspective though, one of the things that I would mention is that I think that I shave my shaft all the time because it makes my cock look bigger. And that's like, that's something for my self-esteem. Now, I might have a bush going on, but one of the things about penises, so penis owners, is that hair grows on our balls, hair grows on our perineum, hair grows on our penis all the way up to about the first, I don't know, one quarter of the shaft. Yeah. And that, for me, I feel less friction when I don't shave. So I want to feel that friction a little bit. I want to make sure that I get more tactile sensation. And when I have too much hair down there, not only does it make my penis look smaller, but it is something that creates a feeling that I don't enjoy. So it's not about cosmetics for me as much as it is about being functional.
Interesting.
Although, and I shave my balls as well, just because, like, I don't like the way that it looks.
Right.
That's cosmetic.
But it's your preference. Shaft, like, if you were, totally. If you had a partner that had a penis, you wouldn't be like, and you have to shave yours, too.
I would shave my penis whether or not I had a partner.
Right.
Even if I wasn't having sex, just because, like, I need it to be functional for masturbation. I need it to be the way that I like the way that it looks. And I actually trim everything on my pubic mound, but I don't shave it off because of shaving bumps, because I get shaving bumps all
right.
the time.
Right.
So it makes it a lot easier just to keep it trimmed really low. And I keep the setting for my pubic hair the same as the beard as I do for my pubes.
Ooh, nice.
Upper beard, though, like, where it's thin.
The carpet matches the drapes.
Yes, the carpet matches the drapes. And if I really want to do that, I should shave it into the shape of a mustache.
You should.
Or grow it out and start waxing it. But waxing it and putting it in my underwear, that would just be weird.
You know what's funny? Yeah. I actually, now that people are embracing pubic hair more, and I'm like, you know, I can do whatever I want. I actually want to have pubic hair to me. And I don't know if I've ever told you this, Ken.
No.
But I still shave it. You know why? Because I don't like the way my pubic hair grows. I have really sparse hair. Like, if I let my leg hair grow, I hardly have any hair. So it's like, you go every 2 centimeters is one gangly little hair in a forest
like
of bald.
And then it looks like a map of Kazakhstan. Yeah.
I just don't like the way my hair grows, and I wish I did because I want to have a nice, nice furry bush, but it's just, it's kind of like a guy with a comb over it. Like, it just doesn't. Makes me sad.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought up porn, Ken, because, like, the politics around all of this are informed by so many things. Like, I actually attended this TEDx type event called SexX Interactive in Philly a couple of years ago. And one of the speakers was this PhD candidate at Widener whose research was entirely about body hair. And I heard her talk and it was fascinating. And she had done all this research going all the way back to the late 1800s about the politics of shaving and kind of, how, you know, we used to not shave really anything other than our beards. And then the shaving industry realized they had kind of run out of market and they wanted to find a way to grow it. And so they decided, we'll start with women's underarms. And they spent like 3 years before they ever sold a single product for underarm shaving. They spent like 3 years doing these very subtle ads in all the women's magazines about kind of like the refined woman, like smoothness. And then they started working in these mentions about underarms. And then all of a sudden they had all these women's razors and women's products. And like all of these women had kind of been trained into like, oh God, I've got to do something about this problem. And then they took it to legs, and then it kind of became a thing where, like, we just culturally decided that to be feminine was to be hairless, and it was driven by this kind of, you know, profit-based model. And then, of course, now we've got porn that, if that's the only time we ever see genitals, like, of course we're going to think a certain thing is, like, normal.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we're all swimming in it, but to pro pubes, I mean, I think, one, kind of having conversations with potential partners about just the politics, their politics around pubic hair, so you can kind of know before you're naked. And two, like, we get rejected for all kinds of really stupid, benign things. Mm-hmm. Pubic hair can feel so personal, but it could be, you know, you get rejected because your boobs are different sizes, or like, who knows? They don't like that you've got like hair on your anus, or because of the color of it. And I think like part of hookup culture and casual sex is also just kind of finding a little resilience around like, oh, well, if that's a problem for you, then we're not going to fuck, moving on.
Right. Yeah.
You know, one of the things that comes to mind when you were talking just about pubic hair in general is the trends in the 1800s were completely opposite of how they are today. And sometimes a good opener for talking about body hair altogether might be discussing something from history and then relating it to what's today. So like back in the 1800s, when somebody had pubic lice, they would shave it off and they actually developed a wig for the pubic mound called a merkin. And the merkin was specifically developed mostly for sex workers back at that age, but anybody that got pubic lice, so that they could maintain the illusion that they had pubic hair.
Right, because if you didn't have pubic hair back in the Victorian era, something that meant something was wrong down there. Yeah.
Yeah. God, it's humans are funny.
Yeah, they are.
We are.
Yeah, because you know what? I'll bet if we wait another, like, 15, 20 years, the attitudes about body mods and hair, and it's all going to be different again.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, totally. It'll be cyclical.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so do you want to help me field a question from Siren about fisting?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. So Siren wrote in that just says, hey, love, I found your podcast. I know you hear this all the time, but I love listening to you. I've always been super close-minded when it came to sex. And with all the information you share, I feel more comfortable with the idea of sex and the endless options that are out there. I want to try fisting. I watched some porn just to get an idea, and it looks amazing. I know you can't just jump into it and you need lots of lube. I've heard you talk about it on the show, but I guess my question is, how does it feel? And how did your body feel after your first time? I have someone I trust who's down for anything. I've known him for about 10 years and we used to date. And so I think I might be able to approach him to help me with this fisting adventure. I would love help. I'm bursting with ideas. Thank you for these wonderful podcasts. Love, Siren.
Yay. Yeah. Fisting. Okay, first of all, fisting is amazing. It really is. It is... God.
Sonny is a master of the hidden duck style of kung fu.
Yeah, yeah. And I would say for fisting, when I first started, when I first did fisting, I think, Ken, I think you were the first one who fisted me. And I had a little
really?
Like, yeah,
I didn't
think
know that.
Yeah, a lot.
It's hot.
A lot of, like physically in here, are you having menopause?
No, it's hot.
Oh, like fisting?
Yeah, okay,
I was like, I'm actually a little cold.
No, I meant you were sexy, sweetheart. Not
no, it is hot. But now I have run I have run into a lot of men, especially that I've slept with in the past or been romantically entangled with, that put a lot of shame onto fisting. Like, oh, you know, it's like throwing a hot dog down a hallway. You're too loose. Nobody would want to be with you if you could take a fist. Oh, yeah. There's all this like societal kind of shame. So I remember the first time when you fisted me. It was, I was surprised you were all the way. I was like, you're what? Everything is up to the, what? Up to your wrist? And then I was like, oh my God, that's so hot. And then I had a moment of like, oh my God, what does that mean? Like,
yeah.
I had conflicting feelings. I've gotten over that over the years. Now I'm like, yeah, put both of them in there. Yeah.
it's like a
clown car in my vagina. All these hands
really?
coming out.
I can go both?
I don't know if you'd be physically able to, but I'd be willing to try.
All right.
Let's do it. All right. So when it comes to fisting, relaxation is the key and going slow is super important. So Ken was talking about that silent duck position, you know, like putting your fingers into a point, going in, you know, first, whatever it is, you know, two fingers, three fingers, maybe even having an orgasm first, so you're really relaxed and really like as turned on as you can be, and all that erectile tissue is primed, and you're kind of partially to get your body relaxed, but also to kind of get completely out of your head, because the minute you're in your head and you're like, oh my God, a whole fit, is it going in me? And you start thinking about it, you clench up without realizing it. So even if that orgasm you have first is to just completely go to la-la land where you're not thinking about anything, cool. And some people, depending on the size of you and the size of your partner's hand, it may not be possible. Like, I'm really into fisting now, so I go to fist other people. And I have long fingers and pretty thin hands. But there are some people that just, as hard as I try, can't get that last thumb in there. And don't be disappointed if you can't. One thing that Ken and I have done is, and this came from a BDSM thing, but it ended up being really cool. We have a chain, like a chain you would buy from Home Depot, just like a metal chain. And it's a long link of chain, and you get really, you know, aroused and whatnot, and start feeding the chain in little by little. By little, by little, by little, by little. And before you know it, you have this like huge tangled bulk of metal chain inside of you. And because you're feeding it in so slowly as you're getting aroused, you don't realize how much you've actually taken. And by the way, when you pull it out slowly, it's amazing. It's kind of like anal beads, like the vaginal. Oh, it's so amazing. But doing things like that where you slowly kind of stretch yourself over, you know, it might be half hour, 45 minutes. I'm talking a long time. That will help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. For me, the few times that I've gotten like the majority of a fist in, it's been post orgasm, at least one, sometimes mm-hmm. two, because then my body's just kind of like blissed out and I've already had a couple of releases and there's lots and lots of like moisture going on. And then we were able to actually like, how much is in there?
Right?
You know, you kind of want to like reach down and be like, that's a wrist.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely think like the idea of fisting can be really hot. Inevitably, because we're talking about this every frickin' time I talk about fisting on this show, I always get at least one comment from somebody who's like, I love your show, but the second I hear fisting, I have to turn it off. Ew. So, you know, to all of you, you're not listening by now, but
yeah,
you know, I think the idea of being fisted is really hot. And sometimes we get so tied to wanting to successfully do the fisting that it can feel like a really big disappointment if we can't, for whatever reason, because of the right. hand size or our body just wasn't ready or we just need practice. And so like, for me, part of the hotness is just in the like talking about it and then trying, and however far we get until I'm like, you know, on cloud nine from pleasure, that's a win.
Right. And I think that doesn't happen until you get out of the, you know, as the receiver, like, how many fingers are you in now? How many?
Yes.
If you're in that mindset, you're not going to be able to. You have to get where you're like, where English doesn't exist anymore in your brain. You're not thinking about how many fingers. You're not. And as the giver, get out of that too. Like, hey, I'm up to 3 finger now. Like, shut up. Like, just let it happen.
Yeah.
Sonny, I love you like a Muppet loves fisting. I just
Aww,
have to say that.
Thank you.
And as givers of fisting, what's your experience been like?
As a giver, and I'm not going to speak for Sonny on this, but for myself, one of the things that, I mean, for me, it's just a huge amount of eroticism, everything involved with it. So that's why I always try to keep my nails short, have a good supply. When I bring my sex bag, I always have nitrile gloves in there just in case somebody does want to get fisted. And we've actually used a couple of very non-traditional toys to assist with fisting. Like one of my favorites is the horse speculum.
Oh, God.
So we use an equine speculum, and the geek in me would like love this. And this is one of, I mean, of course I loved you before this, but Sonny let me throw, I'm a D&D geek. And I have lots of those weird dice, and I had a D20 that I bounced.
Yeah, he rolled it down my vaginal canal and bounced it off my cervix.
Right off her cervix.
Oh!
Yeah.
Through the horse speculum. And we've put glow lights in there so that you can see everything.
And
but it's a great way to open up.
You crit inside my vag,
I did.
By the way.
I crit inside her vag. I totally did.
So it started with fisting, but now we're talking about equine speculums.
Yes, exactly. And Dungeons and Dragons.
Dungeons and Dragons and how they right. all kind of fit together. But I sincerely, I think that it's like one of my main kinks is giving people their first experiences. And fisting is something that not everybody does. So it's a good technique for me personally to get involved with for my own selfish reasons, because I like giving people their first experiences or something that they haven't done very much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what's your experience with anal fisting?
Anal fisting is something that I've done a handful of times, but a bunch of. I enjoy it, but not as much as vaginal fisting.
Yeah, I want to say I've done it once or twice, not very many times. It's fun, but yeah, I like the vaginas. I'm into vaginas. Yeah.
Well, for me, it's that I have butt problems, right, so I'm worried about, am I going to, I turn into a Jewish grandmother at that point.
I can barely get a finger in you,
wanting
much
to
less
feed you and then shove all four or five fingers up your butt? No.
Yeah.
Because I could cause a tear, there could be something happening, and then I'm going to turn all motherly on you. That ruins sex.
Right. And nobody wants, their mother with their hand in their ass.
In their ass. Nobody likes that.
Yeah.
You know, one of my favorite moments ever of just like my adult life. I was at a play party, and someone had kind of made it clear at the beginning that their goal was to be fisted. And if it happened, that would be amazing. If not, super okay. But who would be down with maybe trying to make this happen for the first time? And so a very small-handed individual who's in the sex work industry volunteered. And I was off in a corner having wonderful things done to me. But right in the middle of this very fun-filled play party, I just heard this loud, boisterous, "I just got fisted!" And, everyone stopped what they were doing and clapped. And then, went right back to whatever sexy activity they were in the middle of, or nap, or aftercare. And to me, that was just, one of the most delightful things I've ever been around, because it was pure joy.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is, they all gave a hand.
Exactly. They all gave a hand to that first fisting experience.
Oh, we used to have I forget what it was, Staples or something, but that was easy, that button.
Yeah, that
we used to
easy.
Keep one next to our bed, so it's you get the fist in there, and that was easy. An easy button.
Oh my God, yes. Oh, please, people, do these things.
Yes.
Well, Siren, I hope that inspired you and just gave you that extra little oomph to give fisting a try. Have fun, use all the lube, and try lots of different things. You know, try different positions, different contexts, different hands. You never know what's going to be the thing that feels amazing and delicious and makes it work for you. So, thank you for helping me field those to both of you.
Of course.
Of course.
I was wondering if you would share with everyone how they can find your podcast and also stay in touch with you to find out about workshops and speaking gigs and all that good stuff.
Absolutely. So if you're looking for the podcast, we are American Sex, and we're on pretty much almost every podcasting platform, like iTunes, Stitcher. We're now on iHeartRadio, which I'm excited about. Just go ahead and look for that. You can go to also AmericanSexPodcast.com if you can't find it on your podcasting service. If you want to keep in touch with us and find out what kind of workshops we've got going on, you can visit SunnyMegatron.com. That's SUNNY, Megatron.com. And we have a events calendar on there and all our blog posts and all the fun stuff. And if you want to follow us on social media, I am @SunnyMegatron on almost pretty much anything, Facebook, Twitter, etc. Ken is PsyChicken, PsyChicken, which, tell the story, Ken, because you're laughing.
Okay, just real quick. Yeah, I've been PsyChicken for years, and it originally was because I used to be a professional psychic, and my name is Ken, and I took the domain name and the email names Psychic Ken, and not realizing that it's spelled PsyChicken. So since nobody can see, they're like, I knew you were a psychic, but I thought you were just PsyChicken. So we just left it at that.
You're a psychological
point.
Chicken. That's I what am. You, I don't know.
Which was amazing because I was getting such good SEO. I let my domain name slip, and a Korean company that does some sort of food called PsyChicken took my domain, but they kept putting stuff up for me, and Sonny would get Google notices about the PsyChicken company at tagging me as a famous psychic sex expert in the United States.
Bizarre.
Which I'm okay with. Amazing. They can steal my SEO. Yeah. If they steal my domain, at least they're giving me props.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. So, yeah, that's all the places. I think, that covers it.
Cool. Okay. Well, I will have all those links in the show notes so folks can go subscribe to your show and hear all the things and stay in touch with you and your workshops. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and geeking out with me. This was delightful.
Yes. Thank you for having
us. Thank you so much for having us done.
You're so welcome. To everybody who listened, if you have any comments or questions, please head to sexgetsreal.com and fill out the contact form. Also, if you love the show, you know I also love your support. You can head to patreon.com/sexgetsreal. And until next time, I'm Dawn Sarah. Talk to you soon.